The recently concluded World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, featured a number of lofty goals, a call to action on climate change by Sir David Attenborough, and a lot of talk amongst the world's economic elite about economic inequality and sustainable development. But one of the guests at Davos, Dutch historian and journalist Rutger Bregman, wasn't buying any of it. And his remarks at the conference went viral.
This is my first time at Davos, and I find it quite a bewildering experience, to be honest. I mean, 1,500 private jets have flown in here to hear Sir David Attenborough speak about, you know, how we're wrecking the planet. And, I mean, I hear people talk in the language of participation and justice and equality and transparency. But then, I mean, almost no one raises the real issue of tax avoidance, right? And of the rich just not paying their fair share. I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water. I mean, this is not rocket science. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can talk for a very long time about all these stupid philanthropy schemes. We can invite Bono once more. But come on, we got to be talking about taxes.
Well, joining us now is Rutger Bregman. His book is called Utopia for Realists. He's with us from Utrecht in the Netherlands. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks for having me.
So how have your comments been received?
Well, it depends on on who you're asking. I mean, in Davos, they weren't very happy with me, but I guess the rest of the world was.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about what you were talking about there. You raised the idea of taxing the world's wealthiest individuals. Did you think when you said that you were touching a third rail at Davos?
Okay, so what you have to imagine is that if you walk into the conference, you know, the World Economic Forum, there are all kinds of progressive issues that they're talking about, like feminism and climate change, mm-hmm. and participation and inclusion. You know, they throw all these words around. But then after a while, I started to notice that there are certain subjects that you're not allowed to talk about. So on Tuesday, I was in a private panel, you know, that was under Chatham House rules, not accessible for journalists. Mm-hmm. And I tried to raise the issue of tax avoidance. And the response from the audience was really aggressive.
How did you know they didn't like it? What did they say in response to this idea?
Okay, so what happens very quickly if you talk to millionaires and billionaires about higher taxes is that they immediately respond with, oh, that sounds like communism to me. That's Venezuela. So in their worldview, the choice we have is between capitalism and gulags. That's basically it. And maybe, you know, from a European perspective especially, that sounds quite ridiculous, right? If you look at the Scandinavian countries or the country where I'm from, Holland, I think that relatively higher taxes can work perfectly well, you know, together with a very competitive economy, just like the US and the UK in the 50s and the 60s, by the way.
Well, and how high do you think taxes should go on the wealthy? In this country, there's a conversation going on about potentially a top tax rate of 70%. This is what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the new congresswoman, wants to do.
Yeah, and 70% is actually quite conservative still if you look at history. So in the 50s and the 60s, there was this period that historians call the golden age of capitalism. So this was the period when we had the highest rates of growth, the most innovation, when, you know, we put a man on the moon. And back then, during Eisenhower's presidency, for example, the top marginal tax rate in the U.S. was 91%. And the top estate tax was over 70%. So this can work perfectly well together with capitalism. It's really what you need if you want to tame capitalism, because by itself, capitalism is a very unstable system. And you need these kind of laws and policies and institutions to stabilize it.
But can you get there right away? My question is, if tomorrow Congress were to come forward and say, okay, we're putting in a 70% tax, they passed it, President Trump signed it, the stock market would plummet immediately. And people would lose their jobs as a result of that, don't you think?
No, not at all.
You don't
not
think so?
That actually, the market unemployment would react was like way that? Lower in the 50s and the 60s than it is now. And the stock market is not a very good indicator of the health of a country
Fair point. But don't you think that it would go down pretty dramatically if that were to happen, if the rate on the richest were to go up that much?
Well, maybe it would, and maybe it should, right? So what you actually see, and again, in, for example, a country like Germany, which has better protections for labor, a stronger welfare state, you also see that actually the stock market is on lower levels than in the US. And indeed, I mean, the rich are not getting all the benefits from the growth over there. So I think that it would actually be a good sign if the stock market would go down a bit in the U.S. and that average workers would start benefiting more.
Well, and let me ask you about that, because we're not talking about Venezuela here, but it sounds like what you're saying is that it would be something closer to some of the countries in Europe. And many people have pointed to the fact that the unemployment rate in those countries is higher. In France, it's 9.3%, Spain, 15%, Greece, 19%.
Yeah, well, I think that Greece is a different case altogether. You could also point to Denmark or Sweden, where actually the unemployment rate is quite low. And the question is also what the dignity is of the work that people have. So in the U.S., there are a lot of jobs that simply don't exist in Europe because people just refuse to do them, right? I'm always surprised when I'm in the U.S. to see, for example, people just saying hi to you when you're at a supermarket. Those jobs simply do not exist.
Greeters, we call them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it seems ridiculous to me. So I don't know. I wouldn't just focus on the unemployment numbers, but I would also want to look at the dignity of the work and, you know, how well the work pays and if people actually find meaning in it.
Well, and actually, you think that people should be working shorter work weeks. How does that help people economically?
Well, actually, a shorter working week is pretty much the solution to most of our problems right now. So whether you talk about climate change or whether you talk about increasing stress levels and more employees having a burnout or inequality, there's a huge amount of research that a shorter working week is the way forward. And actually, this could increase productivity as well. It's a very old, very American idea. You know, Henry Ford, for example, he decreased the working week of his employees from 60 hours to 40 hours in the 1920s. And he actually found out that his workers became more productive. And this is what you find time and time again in the research, is that actually the countries with longer working weeks, like the U.S., are not as productive on a per-hour basis as other countries.
Another thing that you talk about in that clip that's gone viral is you seem to have a negative idea about philanthropy or charity. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that that is not a way that the rich can help everybody else?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not against philanthropy if people really have a wonderful project that they care about. But you have to know that these people in Davos often use philanthropy as a way to distract people from the fact that they're, you know, not paying their taxes, and also to distract them from their own corrupt business models. So many of these billionaires have made their money by, you know, coming up with destructive financial products that only destroy wealth instead of creating it. You know, you've got all these tech giants involved in all of these privacy issues and, you know, who are basically trying to let us click on ads more all the time. So I really think you need to look at how philanthropy is actually being used. Is it genuine or is it a way to distract? Now, the only example that I know where it's really, really genuine is Bill Gates, and he gets all the attention and he's doing great work. But the vast majority of billionaires actually gives a very small percentage of its wealth to charity, and it's mostly a PR effort.
What about the idea that you also are in favor of, which would be a universal basic income, which has been brought up? We've talked about it before, but this is the idea that everybody in a country would have a basic income at a minimum. There are questions about how that would be paid for. What do you say to those?
Well, this was actually the reason I was invited to come to Davos to talk about basic income, because it has become such a popular idea in Silicon Valley and among tech CEOs. Now, the idea of a basic income is very simple, right? You give everyone a monthly grant that is enough to pay for your basic needs, which is food, shelter, clothing. And proponents of a basic income argue that this is actually an investment that pays for itself. Because what we have seen in experiments from around the globe is that if you lift people out of poverty, they need less healthcare, you get less crime, kids start doing better in school. So there's a wonderful study from North Carolina called the Great Smoky Mountain Study that they've been running since 1992. And indeed, what the researchers found is that a basic income can pay for itself.
What is the model country in your view right now? Who's doing it as close to the way you want things done as can be?
There are different things you can learn from different countries. But if you look at the Scandinavian countries, obviously they're doing a lot of things really well. Take something like social mobility, right? The chance that you get up on the ladder of success. If you really want to experience the American dream, you should move to Denmark because your chances are much higher there.
Do you think that you're going to be invited back to Davos next year?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it's going to be a dilemma for them, isn't it?
Right.
If they invite me back again, then I'll just say the same thing all over again, right? I will give my taxes speech once more. But if they don't invite me, that will only prove my point. So I wish them good luck with the choice.
That is Rutger Bregman, a historian and journalist based in the Netherlands. We'll link you to that viral video at hereandnow.org. Rutger, thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
And when you go to hereandnow.org, let us know your thoughts about taxing the rich.